the tree of knowledge of good and evil. These are the most remarkable trees that have ever appeared in the vegetable kingdom. They were pleasant to the sight and good for food. This, however, is all that is said about their nature and appearance. They would seem to have been the only trees of their kind, for if they had been common, Eve's desire to taste the fruit of the tree of knowledge and their inclination to eat of that of the tree of life would have been gratified by eating of other similar trees. What the fruits were, we cannot tell, nor is it important to know. Supposition says that the tree of knowledge was an apple tree, but testimony makes no deposition on the subject, therefore we can believe nothing in the case. These trees, however, are interesting to us, not on account of their natural characteristics, but because of the interdict which rested upon them. Adam and Eve were permitted to take freely of all the other trees in the garden, but of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, said the Lord God, thou shalt not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, for in the day that thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die. Naturally it was as good for food as any other tree, but as soon as the Lord God laid his interdict upon it, its fruit became death to the eater. Not instant death, however, for their eyes were to be opened, and they were to become as the gods, or Elohim, being acquainted with good and evil, even as they. The final consequence of eating of this tree being death. It may be styled the tree of death, in contradistinction to the tree of life. Decay of body, and consequent termination of life, ending in corruption, or mortality, was the attribute which this fatal tree was prepared to bestow upon the individual who should presume to touch it. In the sentence, thou shalt surely die, death is mentioned in the Bible for the first time. But Adam lived several centuries after he had eaten of the tree, which has proved a difficulty in the definition of the death there indicated, hitherto insuperable upon the principles of the creeds. Creed theology paraphrases the sentence thus, in the day thou eatest thereof, thou shalt die figuratively, thine immortal soul becoming liable to the pains of hell for ever, and thy body shall die literally afterwards. But it is evident to one unspoiled by the philosophy of the creeds that this interpretation is not contained in the text. The obscurity which creates the difficulty does not lie in the words spoken, but in the English version of them. The phrase, in the day, is supposed to mean that on the very day itself upon which Adam transgressed, he was to die in some sense. But this is not the use of the phrase, even in the English of the same chapter, for in the fourth verse of the second chapter it is written, in the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heavens, and every plant of the field before it was in the earth, and every herb of the field before it grew. This, we know, was the work of 6 days, so that in the day is expressive of that period. But in the text before us, the same phrase represents a much longer period, for Adam did not die until he was 930 years old. Therefore, the day in which he died did not terminate till then. But it may be objected that the day in the text must be limited to the day of the eating, because it says, in the day that thou eatest thereof, thou shalt surely die. And as he was not eating of it for 930 years, but only partook of it once on a certain natural day, it cannot mean that long period. But I'm not prepared to admit that the physical action of eating is the only eating indicated in the text. Adam fed upon the fruit of the tree of knowledge all the time from his eating of the natural fruit until he died. The natural fruit, in its effect, was figurative of the fruit of transgressing the interdict, which said, thou shalt not eat of it. The figurative fruit was of a mixed character. It was good, or pleasant to the flesh, but evil in its consequences. By the law, says the apostle, is the knowledge of sin, for sin is the transgression of law. Sin is pleasant to the flesh, because the deeds forbidden are natural to it. It is that good fruit which the animal man delights to eat. The flesh, the eyes, and life have all their desires or lusts, which when gratified constitute the chiefest good that men under their dominion seek after. But God has forbidden indulgence in these lusts. He says, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And again, the friendship of the world is enmity with God. That whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. And if ye live after the flesh, ye shall die. This language is unmistakable. To indulge then in the lawless pleasures which sinful flesh terms good is to bring forth sin or to bear fruit unto death, and because the wages of sin is death. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to the flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. All the ills that flesh is heir to make up the evil which has come upon man as the result of transgressing the law of God, which said to Adam, thou shalt not eat thereof. The fruit of his eating was the gratification of his flesh in the lusts thereof, and the subjection of himself and posterity to the evil of eating of the cursed ground in sorrow all the days of their lives. All the posterity of Adam, when they attain to the age of puberty, and their eyes are in the opening crisis, begin to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Previous to that natural change, they are in their innocency. But thenceforth the world, as a serpent-entwined fruit tree, stands before the mind, enticing it to take and eat and enjoy the good things it affords. To speculate upon the lawfulness of compliance is partly to give consent. There must be no reasoning upon the harmlessness of conforming to the world. Its enticements without and the sympathizing instincts of the flesh within must be instantly suppressed, for to hold a parley with its lusts is dangerous. When one is seduced by the deceitfulness of sin, he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. Then when lust hath conceived, it bringeth forth sin, and sin, when it is finished, bringeth forth death. In other words, he plucks the forbidden fruit and dies, if not forgiven. Furthermore, the sentence, thou shalt surely die, is proof that the phrase in the day relates to a longer period than the day of the natural eating. This was not a sentence to be consummated in a moment, as when a man is shot or guillotined. It required time, for the death threatened was the result or finishing of a certain process, which is very clearly indicated in the original Hebrew. In this language, the phrase is literally rendered, dying thou shalt die. There is a footnote. The Hebrew idiom is correctly represented by the text of the Authorized Version. Compare Genesis 2 verse 16, eating thou shalt eat, and Deuteronomy 13 verse 15, literally smiting thou shalt smite, so that it does represent an instantaneous action in those quotations. Dr. Thomas, back to the text, says, the sentence then as a whole reads thus, in the day of thy eating from it, dying thou shalt die. From this reading, it is evident that Adam was to be subjected to a process, but not to an endless process, but to one that should commence with the transgression and end with his extinction. The process is expressed by dying, and the last stage of the process by thou shalt die. This view is fully sustained by the paraphrase found in the following words. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground, for out of it wast thou taken. For dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. The context of this informs us that Adam, having transgressed, had been summoned to trial and judgment for the offence. The Lord God interrogated him, saying, hast thou eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee that thou shouldest not eat? Adam confessed his guilt, which was sufficiently manifest before by his timidity and shame at his nakedness. The offence being proved, the judge then proceeded to pass sentence upon the transgressors. This he did in the order of transgression, first upon the serpent, then upon Eve, and lastly upon Adam, in the words of the text. In these the ground is cursed, and the man sentenced to a life of sorrowful labour, and to a resolution into his original and parent dust. The terms in which the last particular of his sentence is expressed are explanatory of the penalty annexed to the law. Thou shalt return unto the ground, and unto dust shalt thou return, are phrases equivalent to dying thou shalt die. Hence the divine interpretation of the sentence, in the day thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die, is, in the day of thy eating, all the days of thy life of sorrow, returning thou shalt return unto the dust of the ground whence thou wast taken. Thus, dying, in the meaning of the text, is to be subject of a sorrowful, painful, and laborious existence, which wears a man out, and brings him down to the brink of the grave. And by die is signified the end, or last stage, of corporeal existence, which is marked by a ceasing to breathe, and a decomposition into dust. Thus man's life, from the womb to the grave, is a dying existence, and so long as he retains his form, as in the case of Jesus in the sepulchre, he is existent in death. For what is termed being is corporeal existence in life and death. The end of our being is the end of that process by which we are resolved into dust. We ceased to be. This was Adam's state, if we may so speak, before he was created. He had no being. And at this non-existence he arrived, after a lapse of 930 years from his foundation, and thus were practically illustrated the penalty of the law and the sentence of the judge. For from the day of his transgression he began his pilgrimage to the grave, at which he surely arrived. He made his couch in the dust, and saw corruption, and with Mother Earth commingled all that was known as Adam, the federal head and chief father of mankind.